Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE, the information and cultural beacon of the Four Corners. Today I will be talking with Elva Oesterreich about her book, The Manhattan Project Trinity Test, Witnessing the Bomb in New Mexico. Good morning, Elva.
Good morning. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. I was really impressed with your book, The Manhattan Project Trinity Test. You did so much work on that, I can tell.
Thanks. I was kind of a year-long project, and I got to meet a lot of new people and talk about a lot of new things.
Had you been interested in this subject for a while?
Well, yes, basically since 2005, when the newspaper that I was working at the time, the Alamogordo Daily News, did a special 60th anniversary issue with the Trinity test.
That piqued your curiosity.
Oh, it did. We looked up all the old stories, and then we reprinted those interspersed with some of the stories of people who remembered that day. It was a fascinating project, and I've always wanted to do a little more about it.
It consists of interviews, basically, with and different individuals talking about their experience with the bomb, the Trinity test. And it was fascinating to see the different points of view on this.
Yeah, there are pieces from the scientists who I think they were required to like write down their experience, and those were people who are on the scene or very close to the scene where the event happened, and then there are stories from further out, the neighbors and the people in the area who experienced something during that time, and there's even stories from further out, from Los Alamos and Silver City and El Paso. People also had some experiences related to the day that the atomic bomb went off, first time ever.
One thing I think you captured with all these interviews and discussions was how awed people were. I don't think anybody expected this to be as big as it was, the magnitude that it was.
The communities surrounding it had no idea what happened. So,
Right. You
know, they weren't really expecting anything. The scientists really weren't sure what to expect. Some of them thought that it might ignite the atmosphere and destroy the entire world. So they didn't really know. It was a complete kind of unknown when they did it.
Isn't that amazing?
It was pretty strange, for sure.
Yes.
And then they didn't tell anybody. I mean, after it happened, the communities and the people surrounding areas had no idea what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
They knew maybe the government was involved. They were told that there was a munitions dump explosion
at
Holloman Air Force Base. I don't know, some people thought the world was ending.
After effects, people talked about some of the after effects that were not at all pleasant.
Well, in the short term, there certainly were, like people talk about, like a gray dust that came down on everything, and mothers were complaining that they had to rewash all their laundry that was hanging out, and there was concern about the water and the cisterns for the ranchers. The people relied on that water as well as the animals. Just a little ash or whatever it was that came down in the downwind areas. Certainly, they noticed.
Right.
Sure. So another consequence that followed up a bit later than that, apparently there was a lot of reports of animals that had changed color on the side that was facing the bomb. There were cows that kind of went gray and blotchy on that side. There was an account of a cat in Tulsa that went from black to kind of a blotchy gray.
Amazing.
Which the owner then later sold for $5 to a tourist. One family claimed that its animals, several of them just kind of fell over and died.
Right. Shock. Just fell down. I thought that was amazing.
One thing at the beginning that I do talk about is the nature of people's memories and what passes down to their children in terms of actual fact, because it's all subjective. It's
right.
Not so much, it's not science so much, although some of the science is covered as well. It's memory, and memories can be strange and faulty.
But I think what you captured was the effect it had on people and their emotions and their feelings, and you captured and their fears and awe, which isn't scientific. And I think they still remembered the amazement of it.
Definitely. Even when you read the accounts of the scientists who are, you know, whose job it is to be objective, you can kind of feel the awe, the power of what they saw. They can't really, you know, they're sharing what they saw and how they felt about it.
That's why I like this book, because there's a lot of studies and there's coverage on the science of it and the facts of what happened and then what happened. But you capture here, as you said, the emotional aspect of it.
I'm just trying to share the experiences of people before they're all gone, before people forget.
Right.
It's just so important. I mean, this is the first time an atomic bomb ever went off, and so many people in New Mexico don't even know that,
right,
that happened here.
So some of the interviews that you have, where did you get those, the ones of people that have since passed?
They came from, oral histories. There are oral histories that I went and sat down and copied. I'm down here in Las Cruces, and so there's quite a few. There's a good collection at New Mexico State University and at the Farm and Ranch Museum here. There are some excellent oral histories available through the Nuclear History Museum. I'm saying that incorrectly, but it's in Albuquerque. They have a big museum, and their website has a lot of... I didn't use that many of those, but people who are interested in looking can go into that system and read some more fascinating stories. If you go to Los Alamos and just walk through the museum, you can find information there and stories there. You know,
right.
Children remember, and so you don't... If people have passed on already, but you can find those families, they've heard stories, and those stories have been passed down to them as well.
Right. And you have some interviews in here are of people that were very young at the time but still remember at the moment the bright light and what they were doing.
Many, many do. There's one that always sticks with me about from a woman who, she had a brother who had PTSD, had already served in the Philippines and had been sent home, but she was still like a child, I think 4 or 5 years old. And so when it happened, her brother kind of freaked out a bit and gave everybody guns and thought that the Japanese were coming to take over New Mexico. And so this little girl and her little brother were told to hide under a bed, and they felt the bed shaking. They were angry because nobody gave them any guns to protect themselves with.
Right.
They decided to protect themselves with this box of, of oranges and nuts and stuff right. that they found under the bed with us.
And they were planning to throw the oranges.
Right.
Yes, that was an impressive story, the way the soldier was limping around in his big cast and telling, terrified that the Japanese were coming.
I mean, that's kind of the feeling of the times. It was a scary time. The war had been going for a good while, and there was a pretty common perception that,
right.
that there was going to be invasion happening.
And so it leads to the fear that when something this a phenomena like that light and the shaking happened. They were like, yep, this is it, the invasion.
Or the end of the world.
Oh, right. Amazing. Would you like to read something from this for us?
Sure. Okay, here is a little account from one of the scientists.
Oh, good.
Edwin McMillan.
Mm-hmm.
He was an American physicist and a Nobel laureate. He was just one of the scientists recruited to be there. The shot went off at about 5:30 a.m., just before sunrise. I was watching through a piece of dark glass, such as is used in welders' helmets. An exceedingly bright light appeared and expanded very rapidly. I was aware of a sensation of heat on my face and hands, which lasted about a second. After 2 seconds, I took the glass away. The sky and surrounding landscape were brightly illuminated, but not as strongly as in full sunlight. The ball of fire was still too bright for direct observation, but it could be seen to be rising and expanding and slowly fading out. At some time during this stage, the layers of clouds visible above the explosion evaporated, forming a hole which rapidly got bigger. At about 30 seconds, the general appearance was similar to a goblet. The ball I estimated to be about a mile in diameter and about 4 miles above the ground, glowing with dull red, a dark stem connected with the ground, and spread out in a thin dust layer that extended to a radius of about 6 miles. When the red glow faded out, a most remarkable effect made its appearance. The whole surface of the ball was covered with a purple luminescence, like that produced by the electrical excitation of air and caused undoubtedly by the radioactivity of the material in the ball. I was trying kind of just to bring to life the experience.
And you did. You really brought it to life. That's even the scientific... The reports from the scientists show so much awe. You did a lot of footwork with this, as well as doing research online and library work, didn't you? I mean, you went out to some of the areas. There's a lot of photographs that you've taken in here.
I went out to the Trinity site for sure, which mm-hmm. is open twice a year. Although they closed at 2020, of course, and they're not doing their April trip this year.
Mm.
They may do it. Hopefully in October, which is, they do it in April and October. And that's an excellent trip for historical purposes and for visualization purposes. I went to Los Alamos and Santa Fe and Albuquerque. And, you know, Socorro is an important place. That's where a lot of the hubbub went to Socorro with train tracks and military
mm-hmm.
trucks. Going around.
Now tell me about the McDonald Ranch.
So this is a ranch that was taken basically by eminent domain later, somewhere around that same area of time, in White Sands Missile Range area. They had taken a lot of ranches from farmers and with the promise of compensation. And the McDonald Ranch also, when they took that, it promised the McDonald family compensation, and they got some compensation, but not nearly what they were promised, and so they fought this for quite a long time. There's a gentleman in Alamogordo that I wrote about, and he's one of the children of one of the McDonald brothers, and he talks about the battle for fair compensation, and one thing he talks about is they had told him that, or not him, but his family, that they weren't supposed to damage any of the property. The original idea was that these families could go back to their ranches whenever the government was done with them, which not supposed to be 75 years.
Right.
which is the point at which we're past it now.
Right.
But they had told the families that they were the houses and the places were all supposed to be left as they were found. And then he tells the story of being with his grandfather in Tularosa, and his grandfather looked up his window one day and actually saw his ranch house being driven away down the road.
Right, he saw his house go by.
Right. And so that's got to be kind of freaky when you think, you know, well, the government took my stuff, but at least it's safe. And then you see your house leaving to God knows where. Actually, went down to El Paso to Fort Bliss. But
yeah.
So there's a lot written about that also, and a lot in the White Sands Missile Range history that's about those ranchers and, like, all the ranchers that were displaced.
Well, one thing I noticed is that so many of the people that have passed died of cancer. I thought that was significant.
Right.
We're seeing more and more of that
right.
with the downwinders. So many of the people didn't express a lot of anger, which surprised me.
So many of the people that are older and that I interviewed that were there and experienced it, they really weren't interested in being angry about cancer or that has happened here or any of that, because the idea was just that the end result of this was the end of the war, and so it was worth it because it saved hundreds of thousands of American lives when they dropped those bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It ended the war, basically, and so many, many more lives were saved than have been damaged. So that's still an attitude of many of the people who are around still from them. And then the thing that the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Organization, which is not only the Tularosa Basin, but also it involves Socorro and people that were actually downwind with more north of the Trinity site.
Mm-hmm.
They essentially would like to just governmental recognition that this did happen and it did seriously damage families and cause cancers, and that those families and people are still very much feeling the results, the radiation and the issues that it caused. Right, yeah, so across the states in Nevada and other places, there were other tests of atomic. And part of the issue that these folks have that are part of the New Mexico organization is that the people that were downwind of some of those other test sites have been compensated to the tune of huge amounts of money and recognition. And really, I think all they want is recognition of the damage here and maybe some help for those families that are still feeling the effects
right.
of the event.
Right, I agree.
I mean, that would be nice. But,
right, right.
I mean, the people in New Mexico aren't even getting that.
Right.
They don't even get checks. And so they do a lot of active lobbying. The group is very active, trying to get some legislation going. And they've had some legislators on their sides working for them. But I don't know, you know, 2020 has kind of derailed a lot of things.
It's significant to me that in spite of people and the oldsters' praise of the bomb, that it stopped a terrifying war, today there's still people suffering from that kind of have lost that vision of the goodness of it, I think.
Right, and I mean, there's no way to tell anymore, or I don't think there ever was, like what would have happened
right.
if they didn't do that. I mean, would, like, there's a quote toward the end of the book from Harry Truman that says, "It was a terrible decision for me to make, but I made it. And I made it to save 250,000 boys for the United States.
Right.
And I would make it again under similar circumstances." But then, you know, how many people died? And those boys were soldiers. They were doing, would have been doing their jobs, but how many actual people in Japan, you know,
right.
had no clue.
Right.
So there's always that balance as to right and wrong.
Right. I don't know that some of those questions will ever be answered either. I mean,
I don't think so.
I don't either. And Einstein, right at the very beginning, you quote him as saying, "We got to do something because the others will develop this bomb if we don't."
Yeah, they were afraid that the Germans were gaining technology and working on it, and so they had to. They felt like they had to do it.
The Trinity test, as the first of them, really defined a whole generation and more.
It was the beginning of the atomic age.
It was.
For sure.
So I know that you're a writer and you've covered many stories and articles for newspapers and you take photographs. What are you working on now after this big project?
So I'm the editor of a small monthly newspaper down here in southern New Mexico called Desert Exposure, and that's like my regular job. It's a lot of fun, and I get to do a lot of traveling to see what's out there and what to do and put out different points of view. Yeah, it's a good job. I love it. But, people keep asking me about a possible other book or what might be coming down, and I don't know, but I do know that there are kind of in the back of my mind is maybe something about the internment camps and the POW camps that were down here. I encountered a number of oral histories while doing research for this book that involved the POW camps and even some accounts of POWs and their experience with the bomb. So,
oh, wow.
That was kind of interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that there were even internment camps in New Mexico.
Yep, we had all of those. We had an Italian POW camp and then German ones and the Japanese internment camps as well.
So you really like to do research on these, the war times, right?
I guess I just am interested in people. So
there you go. Right.
And how they see things and, you know, varying views on life, and this was an important one.
And those things that made them who they are, that they carry through and tell their children about.
It made us all who we are.
It does.
I think that war it just really made us.
The photography's great. I really enjoyed a lot of the pictures that you took here. And then you dug through and got a bunch more. So it's a very well illustrated book.
In the title, The Manhattan Project Trinity Test.
Yes.
It's also, the subtitle is Witnessing the Bomb in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody is searching for it, you kind of need to put that part in, because if you just put in The Manhattan Project Trinity Test, you'll get like thousands of books, because it's very, like you pointed out yourself, it's been written about a lot. So that phrase is important to it, is the witnessing the bomb in New Mexico.
Right, and that's, I think, the focus. So The Manhattan Project Trinity Test, Witnessing the Bomb in New Mexico.
You can certainly find it on the publisher's website. The publisher is Arcadia's History Press.
Mm-hmm.
It's on Amazon. It's on Kindle. I'm slowly but surely getting it at, you know, talking to small bookstores and small bookstore owners and getting it into some of those. I don't know. It's been an adventure.
A year-long adventure, you said, right? It took you a year to...
Yeah, pretty much all of 2019. Not consistently, like, constant, but...
Right.
Off and on.
It was probably on your mind that long.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was kind of on my mind longer than that. Comes together.
It's got to be this big of a project with this much work behind it, and you really enveloped yourself with the stories of these people. When it was all finished, you must have felt both relief and a letdown.
Mostly, I think by that point, I felt relief to get it over there to the publisher, and have it all together and get it proofed and wait for their proof to come back and proof it again. It was a relief, but also it's always a worry because you always worry about what did you mess up?
Oh, yeah.
What did you
forget?
Who did you leave out?
Especially on something like that. It's so different than my fiction writers.
And I feel like probably fiction writers have the same kind of issues if they're like good, good at what they do. They have to. It takes more than people think to put out a good piece of fiction. More investigation, and because you have to get your dates right, and you have to get your street names
right
if you're in a certain area, and you have to understand the actual places you are writing about, or you get caught.
That's true. You do. It's research involved in fiction too. Well, it has been a pleasure to read your hard work, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you. That would be great. This has been really nice. Thank you very much for calling me.
Thank you, Elva. And that was Elva Osterreich talking about her book, The Manhattan Project Trinity Test, Witnessing the Bomb in New Mexico. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE, the cultural and information beacon of the Four Corners.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.